Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. First off, just want to let everybody know that the video version of the giant, my giant tarantulas, I think I called it something like giant tarantulas measuring my big girls or something like that. Anyway, that video is now live, and that was a lot of fun to put together. It's something I've thought about doing for quite some time. I've done a lot of talking over the years just about the realistic size of some of the species we keep. Even if it's just a regular, I don't know, Gramostola porteri or something, what are the realistic max sizes we can look at? Not saying that they can't reach larger sizes, but what if I pick up this spider on a decent dice roll, what size spider am I going to end up with when it is full grown? And I think that's a topic that I've wanted to approach because there's so much misinformation out there involving tarantula size. It's like we love to exaggerate the size of our tarantulas. I can't tell you how many times somebody will come on and I'll post like the spider is 7 inches and somebody will come on and go, well, mine is 13 inches and it's a species that doesn't get anywhere near that size. I had somebody the other day come on to a video about L. parahibana and say that he had one that went from a little tiny sling to 6 inches in a year, and it's now 15 inches after like 3 years. It was something bizarre, which he probably believes that. I don't think he's lying, but I also think we have trouble in the hobby of people overestimating the size of things. Or we read cases where there is an LP that reached 10 and a half, 11 inches, and we latch on to that 10 and a half, 11 inches and go, mine's going to get to be 10 and a half and 11 inches. And it doesn't go that way. That's not how it works. I mean, with any animal you raise, you're going to have bigger ones, you're going to have smaller ones. It's the same thing with spiders. So part of the reason I wanted to do this video was so that people could take a look at some, and this is why it took so long to make. I had the idea years ago when I was doing, you know, just working on the website, but I just didn't have the data for it. I didn't have the pictures, the images, so I'm glad I waited. But the idea was to go, all right, here's a spider that's basically full grown. It's, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And here's its latest molt. Let's measure it out, see what the molt is, and kind of guess from there what size a spider might be. And then talk a bit about the fact that although spiders may make, certain species will make huge gains early on. I just had somebody tell me that one of their spiders went from 3 inches to 4.5 inches when they, I think it was a Formictopus species in a single molt, which I don't discount. That's a huge jump though. Later on, the thought process is, oh, if it's making that much of a jump when it's a sling or juvenile, then when it hits adulthood, it's really going to put on size, and that's not how it works. Generally speaking, they hit kind of their quote-unquote their max size. So I'll take my G. porteri, for instance. Her last three molts, I think there was only a quarter of an inch difference between them. She was the amount of growth was negligible. So I think that's sometimes where the inaccurate measurements come from is people go, all right, it last time it molted, it went from 5 inches to 5 3/4 inches. So this time it must have gone up a whole inch, and that's not really how it works. So I do have some species on the list. I talk about the fact that although they hit, you know, almost 7 inches early on, they're only 7 3/4 inches now, several years later. So again, it comes down to doing stuff that's fun. I enjoy putting these together, and I did have kind of an epiphany after having a conversation with somebody that I tend to, like, out of spite sometimes avoid doing fun videos. And my thing is, it's always got to have that educational bent. So I'm glad I'm kind of breaking out doing some of these because it's fun putting that bent on it. Like, all right, you're going to walk away, you're going to see some, it's a nice little showcase video. If somebody pops on Tom's Big Spiders or, you know, wants to see something a little more entertaining and a little less me just gabbing the whole time, although I do gab the whole time, that's the type of video. It's like, ooh, wow, big spiders. But then I get this kind of put a little of the knowledge in there, put a little of the teaching in there by talking about the fact that, all right, this is more realistically what you can expect from some of these giant species and kind of get rid of some of that misinformation out there on them, because there's a lot of it. And again, I don't think it's almost like it falls in line with like the Instagram and the people altering the photos to make them look basically like they're radioactive. Like they'll take let me just pull something out that I haven't seen a picture of. Because every time I do this, somebody will come on and go, I think that was me. And it's like, I'm just pulling random things out of my head. But the Carabina Versicolor, I not that long ago saw somebody threw one of those up. This thing was just like a rainbow nightmare. They had jacked up all the colors on it, and what happens is people see that and then they get the C. versicolor, which is a beautiful spider and doesn't need to be doctored to have a, you know, the pictures don't need to be doctored to see a gorgeous colorful spider, but they see that, they get theirs, and I get things like, I don't know if something's wrong with mine because it's really not glowing like the one I saw on Instagram. So I think the whole size thing goes along with that, where when people throw up pictures, they want to it's not bragging, but they're proud of their spiders. They want people to recognize how cool they are. So they jack up this, you know, here's my 16-inch C-Versa color that seems to be, you know, have been raised in Chernobyl because it's literally glowing in the dark. You get that kind of stuff. And the problem I have with it, I mean, it's harmless to a point until you get people that argue on your videos, like, that sounds terrible. Why is yours so small? Why is your spider so small? I know a buddy of mine has one. I had happened the other day where I posted something, and I think it was an old video of T. Cermi, and my buddy had a T. Cermi. It was 14 inches long. Well, I hope he got photos of that, because that would be literally the largest spider on record right now. But it probably wasn't 14 inches long, but he believes it is, and that kind of bothers me. And then the fact that people overlook the fact that a 7-inch spider is still a huge spider. An 8-inch spider is an enormous spider. 9-inch spider, fantastically gigantic spider. Like, you have to see them to appreciate, especially some of the bigger bodied ones like the LP or the Sturmey or the Blondie. They all thick, big spiders. Even if they only hit 9 inches, you're going to have an enormous spider. So hopefully by having these more realistic outlooks on what their sizes might be, people won't have that disappointment when there's, like, I've had people go, yeah, I don't know what's wrong with mine. It's 8.5 inches. Enjoy it. That's a huge spider. Even if it doesn't grow anymore, which it probably will continue to grow through its life, but even if it doesn't grow anymore, you have an enormous arachnid on your hand. So video's done. I noticed a couple people popped over and said it was nice seeing the footage of it. And I only mention here because I know I have my podcast folks. A lot of you guys are driving to work right now, which I think is awesome. I think a lot of people lately telling me what they're doing. And apparently I'm the in thing for driving to work, which I can't imagine because I used to carpool with a guy and I felt like I used to talk his ear off. Granted, it wasn't about spider stuff, but I think that's the coolest thing in the world. But those of you that are driving to work, you know, obviously not going to be able to look at the video, but if you get time and want to see some of the species, I did get Billy got some of the amazing images of them. I didn't do anything. I just sat there and talked the whole time, but she's the one that does all the hard work. So beautiful image of them. Definitely check it out. So today's topic, I've been giving a lot of thought about this lately because I've been doing the Thomas Big Spider stuff for many, many years. And I always thought that we'd get to a point where, as a hobby, there would at least be somewhat of a general consensus on how to care for these animals. And I realized the other day, I kind of had another epiphany, that's never going to happen. And the reason why that's not going to happen is it comes down to just how durable and how adaptive tarantulas are, and the fact that they can seemingly thrive in many different situations. So I often talk about that ad nauseum, the fact that the hobby is full of gray areas, and we're going to be talking about quite a few gray areas today. But the fact that, sadly, because of these gray areas, there's never going to be a point, I think, where we all come to a consensus how to care for them. So kind of the topic today is, why is such a simple hobby so darn complicated? And I mean that. I've spent years trying to convince people that tarantula keeping does not need to be complicated. You can keep your tarantulas. They can be healthy. They can be content as an giant arachnid can be, without having to go nuts with some of the, you know, things that you read online. And I get it, because basically there are a couple different things started this. One was going through my email the other day and realizing that, you know, I'm getting the same questions that I got 7-8 years ago, and they're just never going to end. Not a bad thing, not like, oh my God, I can't do this, but like, how isn't this information gotten out yet? How aren't there more people that kind of, you know, took this idea and ran with it and did their own thing with it? And then basically what happened, I was sitting in bed the other night and I went to look up one of my articles online about humidity and realized that I'm writing about the fact that we don't need to measure humidity. And I strongly believe this. It is not, I've proven it. My bottom line, over years, I don't measure humidity at all. My tarantulas do fine. I have a gauge in my room to just give me an idea if the room's getting too dry when the heat goes on in the winter, but I don't have things in the cages. I think that's something that's brought over. I've stated this before. It's been brought over from another hobby, the reptile hobby, where you have to be a little more careful of that stuff. And however, there are articles out there, and I'm not saying they're wrong. I want to make this very, very clear. This isn't, oh my God, these people are writing stuff, because they're not. They're explained. I read them. They were well done, although one of them flat out checked my whole articles on humidity and used it for his argument, which is a little upsetting. But there are so many, just going through, if you look that topic up, my theory is people, we realize this now in the hobby. We realize that you don't need to worry about humidity. It's something that when you're getting into the hobby, if you want to get into the hobby later on and start experimenting with plants, that you got to keep the humidity up and stuff like that, that's a totally different ballgame. If you're getting in and doing breeding where it might be a little more conducive to the breeding process to make sure that they have a wet season in your home and a dry season. Obviously, that's something totally different. I'm not saying there aren't spots where you need to do it. I just don't think that folks need to get into the hobby right away and worry about humidity. I don't know. And I've bred, you know, bottom line, I've bred before. I don't worry about humidity. It's moisture dependent, not moisture dependent, and arid or somebody in between. It's very, very simple. But when I went on and did a search and just kind of looked up tarantula humidity, tarantula temperatures, what I found were articles that I could tell were flat out written in opposition to mine with people with totally different points of view, which is fine. I'm not, again, this isn't about discounting it. But now imagine you're a person who's getting into the hobby, and this is what happened to me. This is what I bring up the Caribbean Diversicolor thing when I first got in. You look up something, and here's one guy that seems to, you know what he's talking about that's telling you, hey, I don't measure humidity in my closures. Don't worry about humidity. Forget the H word. We're just going to talk about moisture dependency. Either it needs moist substrate or it doesn't. Because let's keep in mind, how are we going to keep humidity up in our enclosure? We're going to keep moist substrate in there and probably a water dish. So you don't need to measure it. You can tell if there's moist substrate in a water dish and decent ventilation. Even with decent ventilation, the inside of that enclosure is going to have decently high humidity. So that's why I don't bother with it, because it's not, it's superfluous. It's not necessary. However, you've got this new person that just went on and read one per keeper who is a great keeper, knows what he's doing, been doing it for years. He measures humidity in all the enclosures. You get the other keeper, seems to know what he's doing, been doing it for years, doesn't measure humidity at all. That's like black and white. That's two different things. So what do? That's right there starts to create that seed of doubt when you get into the hobby. You have other ones where, again, talking about temperature. I wrote an article about we don't worry about temperature. I always give a range for room temperature. I will make that clear. I don't do the whole, if you're comfortable, they're comfortable, because I can be comfortable in 50 degree weather. You don't want your tarantulas, and in a t-shirt, you don't want your tarantulas exposed to that. So you kind of give a range, you know, mid 60s to 80 degrees or so. That room temperature range, you're going to do just fine. I've proven it. I've raised tarantulas in high 60s, mid to high 60s in the winter. They've done fine. They've molted. They ate. There's been no issues with it. However, you go on and you look up about tarantulas and temperature, and what do you find? You find articles that say the polar opposite. I found an article that said the person said that if tarantulas aren't heated, they will die, flat out. If your tarantulas aren't heated, they need heat, they will die. So guess what? I go out, I know nothing about tarantulas. Maybe I've dabbled in the reptile hobby where I know we have heat lamps and everything else. I read that, and I read the other guy that says, don't worry about heat. Guess which one I'm going to go with? And now you're starting the hobby, making it more complicated and more dangerous for the tarantula than you intend, trying to do the right thing. And to be clear, I am not saying there aren't situations where heat isn't involved, where people use space heaters. I know folks overseas, England, Scotland. I get a lot from Scotland that talk about how cold their housing is. Apparently, I do well in the winters in Scotland because I love my house nice and cool. But a lot of folks talk about how their temperatures in their house are not high enough to be, you know, good for tarantulas. Like we're talking 50s, high 50s. Yeah, I wouldn't mess with that. And then we talk about getting into heat mats, but there's ways to use them. Telling people in an article that the best way that you have to heat your tarantula and that you have to put a heat mat underneath the glass enclosure is a good way to end up with dead teas. So in that one, I do disagree with. The humidity one, we can argue that all day long. There's people that keep them. They measure the humidity. I could go right now and put humidity gauges in all my enclosures. I can pretty much tell you what it's going to be. And the reason I don't do it is because I don't think it's necessary. But I could do that and then go out and do all my husbandry videos and go, yes, this one I keep at, right now it's 82% humidity. This one's at 75% humidity. But I know it's not needed at all. So for me, it's always about who's coming into the hobby. Let's pretend like they have no background knowledge about any of this stuff whatsoever. What is the easiest way for them to start and raise their spider up, have their spider do well, be healthy? How do we tell if it's healthy and content? Well, the webbing species will web. The terrestrial species will just sit out in the open like pet rocks, but they're not all squished up. They seem confident. They will eat. They will molt. They will not have molt problems. That's a good sign. Those are the things we can look at and go, this tarantula appears to be healthy. Because again, we've talked about many, many times that they are not the most expressive animals in the world, so it can be difficult to tell whether a tarantula is healthy or not. So why is it such a difficult hobby? Because we, unlike other things, like you out there and you look at fish, and again, I'm sure folks are going to chime in. I've only kept a couple fish tanks in my life. I am no expert on tropical fish, but I had a buddy that did, and he was constantly, you know, he had the saltwater ones. He was measuring the pH. He was having to adjust things. There's chemicals you add. You do have to keep, there are parameters. There are guidelines for these fish that you do have to keep things within a certain you know, pH level, certain temperatures, or else your fish are not going to do well. And I think with fish, you know, using that example, if I go and I decide I want to put together a saltwater tank, there's going to be a lot of information telling me exactly the pH, the temperature it needs to be at, how to add the salt, how much salt to add, you know, whether you're doing live coral, whatever. There are a lot of different things that I can get immediate, pretty cut and dry information. Now, I'm sure somebody in those fish are going to come on and go, no, there's still debates on that. I'm sure there are some debates about it, but at least I can get a ballpark. With spiders, it isn't like that. Unfortunately, we're realizing, again, this comes down to their adaptability. We're realizing that one person can keep an LP in a moist enclosure with water dish and live plants, and the LP thrives. And obviously it needs moisture because look at my LP is doing great. Another guy can keep his LP on dry substrate with no plants, a hide, and a water dish, and the LP is just as big, eating just as well, molting fine, and thriving. We have two polar opposite setups, both of them yielding what appears to be positive results. How do you tell which one's the right one? That's not a gray area. That's a spider that can live wet. That's a spider that can live dry. And I think that's where we run into problems with this, because we do have ones that people can keep different ways and still have positive results. I always try to explain with tarantulas, when people start freaking out about how difficult they are, I try to break it down to the point and go, listen, it's not that difficult. You have, you know, the big things you need to be concerned with as far as setups. You have terrestrial tarantulas, you have arboreal tarantulas, and you have fossorial tarantulas. And then you have an occasional ones like I think of an OBT or a GBB that would benefit for a little more, with a little more height so they can do their webbing. But again, that's something that not everybody needs to figure out right away. But basically three different possibilities of how to set up a tarantula enclosure. If you go out there, now obviously we could get into the whole, that's the other thing, the whole debate about whether or not you need really nice enclosures or whether you can use, I don't know, a Sterlite shoebox. Regardless, there's things you can go out there and kind of get a ballpark of what size enclosure or what type of enclosure you need for each of those types of species. Now, we're going to add another little wrinkle to the tarantula keeping difficulty level. There are a couple different kinds of tarantulas in terms of moisture. So now we add to the mix, you have your arid tarantulas. So I'm looking at your Brachypelma species, your Phanopelma species, your Gramostola species, amongst others. And then you have your moisture-dependent species. And I'm thinking of, I don't know, T. sturmi, T. blondi, T. apophysis. Some people keep their Pamphibidius moist, Oviolosipes, H. gigas, things of that nature. The ones that we think absolutely need moist substrate in a water dish, that, or if you're going the humidity route, higher humidity at all times. That's pretty much it. So your combo is going to be, for most spiders, and obviously we can break down where it gets a little tricky, but you're going to look at setting up an enclosure that's either a terrestrial arid or terrestrial moisture dependent or something in between. Obviously, we do have the species like Cancerides, the, you know, Pisa letharia that seem to be able to do well dry, but I think it's more prudent to keep them moist. We have other species that you don't need to go overboard with a moist substrate, but definitely having that water dish full and giving them a moist corner is preferable. And you may even see from them that some of them appreciate that area by lingering over it. So we do have the species that are kind of in between, but think about it. There's a handful of species that you can keep completely bone dry. There are a handful of species that you have to make sure the substrate's wet all the time. And there are ones in the middle where you can just throw a water dish in there, moisten down a corner, and you're good to go. That's pretty simple. So then it's just, all right, do I set my moisture-dependent species up as a fossorial or an arboreal or a terrestrial? Boom, done. Do I set my arid species up as an arboreal or a fossorial? That's it. That's pretty much, you can take any species of spider and kind of use that little formula with those three different types of enclosures and then the two-type moisture dependency. We'll just call it moisture dependency, arid, or in the middle. How's that? And you can set your spider up that way. If you're talking about slings, it's almost easier. And this is why I hate doing, and if people ask me to do care guides for things I only have as slings, like, well, just let me know how you're keeping it as a sling. Well, I'll tell you how I'm keeping it as a sling in moist substrate. 99.9% of them, 99% of them, I keep in a moist substrate. The only two I can think of that I don't overdo it with a moist substrate on are the OBTs. I give them a water dish in a moist corner, or if they're in a vial, just part of the substrate moist, but they don't seem to prefer it. And with the GBBs, the C. cyaneopubescens, again, the same thing. I give it a little, and both similar enclosures, both of them get kind of a higher deli cup or a higher dram vial, so they have room for webbing because they're heavy webbers. I can drip some water on the webbing. That's about it. Every other species, I definitely give wets, but even my Brachypelmas early on, I give kind of some wet spots in there just in case, because slings can dehydrate more quickly. That's it. That's all there is to it. So Now we have, you know, slings are all pretty much kept the same way. We have adults. You have just a couple different combinations of how to keep them. That's it. That's as easy as the hobby can be. And then if you keep your temperatures, say 65 or above, you should be in good shape with the majority of species out there. That's the lens I view the hobby through. Anything that you start doing above that is going to complicate it. Not saying it's a bad thing. If I want to go and add plants, that's complicating the hobby, but it's not something you have to do. If I want to stick humidity gauges in all my enclosures, again, you can do that. I do always laugh about the humidity gauge thing because people will put the humidity gauge. They have to have humidity gauge. They put them inside the enclosures. Well, what are you doing for the ones that are in the dram vials? Why aren't you measuring the inside of the humidity there? Why, if you have to do it for all the adults, you'd have to do it for the slings as well, right? And so that's always the one that always kind of cracked me up because it's like, all right, you don't really need it. But if you do it, is there anything wrong with that? No, if is knowing the humidity, and I'll tell you, is there information you could get from it? Absolutely. You could be seeing, I know some folks that track the humidity levels and they track, you know, when they molt and they see if there's any differences. That's cool. But I'm just saying it's not needed to get into the hobby, to buy a spider, to raise a spider, even from sling to adulthood, and have it be healthy and have it thrive in your care. That's the simplest ground. A lot of us have done it over the years. A lot of people that got into hobby, especially in the 90s, we were mostly keeping them wrong. We're sticking them in 10-gallon aquariums, but a lot of us kept the tarantulas in very stripped down enclosures. I still think that's where a lot of the old worlds got their reputations from, because I know in the 90s when they sold old worlds, you'd put them in a 10-gallon aquarium, you'd throw in some gravel or some vermiculite, there wasn't any room for them to hide, there wasn't enough room for them to dig in, so you'd have really upset, nasty, ornery spiders. I think that's where a lot of that came from. But we did think we kept things more simply, and a lot of people kept tarantulas, you know, through the 90s and early 2000s very simply in the Sterilite boxes, and they did fine, and they bred them and they paired them. There are still some folks out there that do it this old school way and breed a lot of tarantulas and have success with the breeding, even though they are kept in ways that we don't usually keep them nowadays. That's one of the things that contributes to the uncertainty of anybody entering this hobby. There are just so many opposing views with no clear right or wrong answer. Who's right as far as humidity and, you know, measuring humidity in moisture-dependent species? Nobody's right or wrong. If two people are doing it, if one person doesn't measure and one person measures and both of them have healthy spiders that are eating and thriving and molting, nobody's wrong there. That's what it comes down to. It's not my thing, and I explain why it's not my thing, but it's not wrong. If one person gives it a water dish, and this is going to be a tricky one for me, but I'm going to go this route. If one person gives them water dishes and one person has been raising them from years and doesn't give them water dishes, and both people have no deaths to report, their spiders are molting. I'm kind of going on a limb here because I don't think this is usually how it happens, but I do know of people that have never kept water dishes with them that have no problems with them. How do you say the person not using water dishes is completely wrong? A lot of us flat out believe we've seen them drink. We understand they'll drink. We think that it's wrong not to give them the opportunity to do it at all times. But folks just coming into the hobby will see that and go, well, that's one less thing. That's simplifying the hobby there. Actually, if we talk about, you know, as far as making it less complicated, folks that aren't using water dishes, one less thing you have to worry about. So it's tough because I kind of was able the other night when I was going through this led to, after I started looking up humidity, I started looking up all this different stuff, all these different old worlds, you know, should people get old worlds early on? Should they not? Do you need humidity? Do you not need humidity? Do you need lights? That's another one. Do you not need lights? All of this stuff. And I realized I was able to put myself in the mindset of somebody that was just getting into the hobby that maybe hasn't found. I'll tell you, the great equalizer is usually arachnoboards. I know that people give arachnoboards a lot of grief, but there is some great information there carried, you know, through many years where you can go and see exactly how people are keeping them. Granted, they have their biases as well, but if you go on arachnoboards and start there, it starts to make it easier to recognize which of these two sides is the way you probably want to go. But without that, you go in, I was able to sit there and look at some of these articles, and I got it. Like that question I was asking myself the other day, how are people still asking about this? How are people still emailing me about what humidity there? And I got this three times the other week. People asking me what the humidity level should be for B. hemorrhoi. That's a tough one because that's one of the ones, that especially as, you know, juveniles and adults, they're arid species. Slings, you just give them moist substrate. it's persisting because if you go out there and look, there are just as good information on both sides. Like there are well-written articles, there are videos, there are, if you get into the whole YouTube thing, we talked about before that some of the biggest YouTubers out there, the ones with huge followings, don't necessarily do the things the way I would do. But guess who's going to, you know, when it comes down to it, when YouTube comes down to it, how do you judge how good your source is? A lot of people will go, they have this many subscribers, the video has this many views. There could be a video out there that is the be-all, end-all, holy grail on how to take care of tarantulas correctly, but if it only has 200 views, it's not reaching anybody, and nobody's going to look at it and go, this is the video, this is the one I need to look at. They're going to go out there, and they're going to go, well, this guy right here says that we don't need heaters, but he only has 2,000 views on this video. This guy over here says he heats all of his tarantulas and he has 50,000 views on the video. I'm going to go with him because obviously he's the right one because more people are going by him. That's where it gets tricky. So it's a minefield out there. It's still a minefield out there. I was talking to Billy about the other day and it was like, it almost feels overwhelming at times because I do believe in what I'm talking about. I do believe I'm able to show success with the way I keep things. The fact that I get people emailing me and contacting me, telling me, hey, I got into the hobby a year ago and I followed all your videos and your advice and your website and my tarantulas. I have a collection of 35 and they're all healthy and I haven't lost one. I love that stuff because like, yeah, I'm helping people out. But I'm just a blip on the radar as far as the amount of information that's out there. And it seems like the more popular tarantulas get, the more popular people get doing, you know, the social media stuff, whether it be YouTube or podcasts or websites, whatever it may be, the more folks that are going to go, I want to do this now. And so then you're going to have even more information out there, more, and some of the stuff can be flat out bizarre, like the people are putting up there. But as long as it gets views and gets followings, that's going to be something that's going to be an alternate point of view for many folks that are just starting in the hobby. So I think, again, it just comes down to it's the nature of the beast. They are incredibly adaptable animals. I don't think that can be mentioned enough. I had one of the articles I was reading was like, well, just because a spider can live in drier conditions doesn't mean that's the right way to keep it. If you just look at what its natural environment is, it's supposed to have this much humidity, which that's obviously a broad statement. But I looked at that and I was like, yeah, I see what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense. If just because something, and we've talked about this before, just because something is doing okay and eating and seemingly not dying doesn't mean it's the best way to keep it. So I get that. And that makes a lot of sense. And I do think we need to think about that. But then I also think the fact that there are a lot of folks to keep, you know, we take the T. albopilosis, for example. That's one that people argue about whether or not they need moisture. I've always started mine off with moisture and kind of looked to see whether the tarantula needed it or wanted it or not. You can usually tell that because if it's moist, they will linger in those moist areas. You'll see them around the water dish more. But I have ones that they just haven't shown any preference for it whatsoever. I still moisten down a corner just because that's one of those species that you never know. But that's, you can tell sometimes whether they absolutely need it or even desire it. So I don't think we can actually say, you know, they all need to be kept at the humidity level that they are found at. That's the other thing that I always like to mention is that we should always be aware of where these guys come from. We should, in our research, look at, you know, what type of weather they get. But I think we also have a tendency to look at the most extreme weathers, and we look at the heat and we don't look at other things. So people will come out and go, oh, this species lives in a place where it's 95 degrees or 90 to 95 degrees. So obviously it needs temperatures 85 or higher. But then we fail to look at the fact that during the colder winter months, it may drop down to the 50s. These are the things that we don't always look at. Or we try to emulate its natural environment, like I think in the case of Avicularia species or Caribbean versicolor, or even the GBB back in the day, we looked at where they came from. We looked at the weather and the climate. We decided they were species that needed high humidity, and we ended up killing a bunch of them off because it didn't really work that way. We found out with Avicularia, you need that cross ventilation. Good ventilation is crucial. You can moisten the substrate down and you can spray things down, but they need that breeze in there. GBBs, they don't need moisture at all. So that's where it kind of gets tricky because there are those species that we have shown that if we try to emulate where they come from too well, they don't do well. They don't thrive. They thrive better in an environment that doesn't quite mirror, or it might even be the polar opposite of the environment they are exposed to from where they come from. So that's what makes this such a tricky thing, because there are no, and again, I want to make this very clear. I have my way of doing things. It works for me. Are there other ways of doing it to have success? Yes, there are. My big thing is trying to make things as simple as possible for people to reduce. It's always been about reducing the stress, giving people no-nonsense information, giving people information backed up by experience. That's another thing that absolutely drives me nuts is, and I've said this many times, but the other day when I was doing my little, you know, scavenger hunt, looking around, first I'd put in topics and I'd look and see how many different opposing views there were on each side of it, whether it be articles or, you know, in some case videos popped up, and it was like 50-50, any topic you wanted to think about. No humidity, just moist substrate versus measuring your humidity in all your enclosures, it was like 50-50. Water dish versus no water dish, there were a bunch of people saying they needed water dishes, there were a bunch of people saying they didn't need water dishes. Temperatures, ideal temperatures, a lot more people saying they needed ideal temperatures, unfortunately, so that one's going to persist. The heat, no heat, I was shocked to find out there are people out there that are saying you absolutely need to heat them. The one, I'm not making that up, it was something along the lines of, if you don't heat your tarantula correctly, they will probably die or could probably die, something like that. But again, that type of information is going to scare somebody, get them out buying heat lamps and heat mats. And then even the old world versus new world thing, totally different points of view on it. So where do you start? And then when you get into it, and this is the other thing I did, I started reading the articles and trying to figure out who wrote them. And there were so many times that I found people that either flat out plagiarized stuff from other sites, like one of them flat out ripped out like three paragraphs of something I wrote about humidity, which was a little irksome because the article was kind of totally crap, for lack of a better term, and not what I believe in. But then there were other ones we could tell, one or two of, you know, the two articles, somebody copied off somebody else. And then there are the ones where you could tell, like some guy said flat out he had one spider. Another guy said he had a couple spiders. Another guy I don't think had any spiders at all. So now you have people that are writing articles about stuff. And we've gone through this before, so I'm not touching on it again. But another layer to the problem is people that are writing this stuff aren't even writing about what they're experiencing. So you're going out there going, you need a heater, but I don't even have a spider. So people are seeing this going, oh, I need a heater, not realizing that they should probably be looking for somebody that's actually, you know, if you're going to do the heat thing, find somebody that does it and does it well and has had success with it. That's what, the way you want to go. So why is such a simple hobby so darn complicated? Because we have a lot of gray areas. We're not like other hobbies in some other hobbies that enjoy more of the uniform. Now, obviously, there's difference in opinions in any hobby you go to, and there's different things. I know this for a fact, even the aforementioned tropical fish hobby, there's arguments all the time, but there are some, I think for some of them, there are more set in stone rules, more guidelines, especially in terms of, you know, the conditions we keep them in. With tarantulas, they've shown that adaptability that really leaves it open to a gray area. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who knows? Maybe both, probably both. But it's also a very easy hobby to complicate, because when you have somebody say that your tarantula needs heat or it will die, if you have somebody saying that they absolutely need to be kept at this humidity level, that's type of stuff that you're going to read and you're going to want to go with that instead of, say, somebody like myself going, you don't have to worry about that stuff. I understand that because when I was doing my research, I remember my Caribbean Versa car, I need to keep this at 80% humidity. I was getting ready to order some humidity gauges. It wasn't until I talked to a keeper that had actually bred them before that went, don't listen to that stuff. It's tricky. It's tricky to navigate this hobby. There's a lot of good stuff out there. I kind of stay in my own little world. It's been so long since I've had to look up anything like that, that I didn't realize how many alternative sources there are out there right now with, you know, saying sometimes the opposite things, not the wrong things, the opposite things. So I think, you know, would I love to see someday that we kind of come to a consensus on some of these things? Absolutely. It would make things so much easier. I think there'd be so much less stress and apprehension for folks getting into the hobby if we could at least go, all right, I don't know, we're going to refer to moisture dependency or arid species. We're not going to get into the H word because it's tricky for people to learn how to use humidity gauges. It's never going to happen. And there are going to be people that continue to monitor, which is fine. There's going to be my camp that continues to go, you don't need to. That's fine. I'd love to see some type of consensus on some of these things. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think it's just going to continue. I've been in the hobby for a decent amount of time now. I think the hobby has kind of exploded in the past 10 years or so. Like, it's become huge. Somebody was just asking the other day why the prices of spiders seem to be going higher and higher in the US. It's because the demand for spiders is going up higher and higher in the US. This business is huge now. The number of spiders we are picking up and buying in this country is, I can't speak to other countries, I'm talking about the U.S., is huge now, which means more people out there looking for information, which means more people out there emulating the folks that they like that got them into the hobby and putting out their own information, whether it be website or podcasts or YouTube pages, and it means more of these dissenting opinions are being cast out there on the web for people to consume and to evaluate. So I think all we have now is a kind of a state of the hobby now. I think we're probably pretty similar to where we were when we first started, when I first started off and started writing the Thomas Big Spider stuff. I think just everything's grown. So there's, we've come no closer on any of these camps to coming together and just going, all right, let's just agree on this. I think it is what it is. There's always going to be that schism between the different opposing sides. I don't think it's ever going to come together. I mean, in a way, I guess the good side of it is we do have a hobby that does allow for some experimentation. I have argued before that we don't want to come in and try to invent the wheel. I can't tell you, every once in a while, every month or so, I'll get this crazy email from somebody that's just entered the hobby, read both sides of things, and decided they've come up with this totally different way of doing things. Like I had somebody the other day that decided they need the day-night cycle, and it needed to be a certain number of hours. And if you kept them a certain number of hours with light, they actually grow more quickly, and you get better colors on that. It was weird. And you can tell they put a lot of thought into it, but it's kind of, we've already decided they don't require that. I think it does, with that experimentation, it does allow for us to constantly re-examine what we're doing and try to evaluate whether it's working for us, whether there are better ways to do it. Again, that's another thing I always try to say, and another idea I always try to push forward is the fact that always never rest on your laurels. Even if things are going well, it doesn't mean you go change everything you're going to do, but always have an open mind. Always look at what other people are doing and always try to figure out if there's something that can be gleaned from it that can improve your keeping. And I think because we have these polar opposite sides of doing things and both of them achieving success, it does allow for that ability to kind of, you know, from both ways. You have somebody that's keeping their tarantula in, I don't know, just a regular Sterilite box, and they go, I'd really like to branch out and try something with a plant, maybe a bioactive. And then they go over and they start looking at the folks that are keeping them more humid, and they're measuring the humidity. And this guy's got a spider that he keeps at 80 degrees at 85% humidity, and it's doing great. I could create a bioactive enclosure then, because obviously it can live that way. I could put a plant in there. Anyway, it allows them to kind of break that mold and go, there is another side to the hobby. And I've also talked to people that started off, you know, keeping them with, they were measuring the humidity. They were obsessive about it. They had plants, they watered, they're misting. And then they realize little by little that they didn't need to do that anymore. And they're like, yeah, I don't use the humidity gauge hygrometers anymore. I just know that if I keep the substrate moist and the water dish full, my tarantula does really well. So it goes both ways. So I guess at some point, a lot of us do end up, it's like political parties. There's some of us that kind of end up in the middle and we kind of touch hands a little bit like, hey, we're almost there. I guess in that respect, it's good because it does keep us thinking. I just sadly, when I first started this, and things started picking up and people were actually going to my site and asking for recommendations and asking for advice, I was like, man, we could really make an impact here. Once, you know, things started picking up, I remember telling Billy, like, we could save people a lot of trouble, make it a lot easier. So finally people can just go and find the information they need. It's never going to happen. I realize that now. There's always going to be folks asking, you know, what temperature they should be keeping it at. There's always going to be folks asking, you know, how to monitor humidity. There's always going to be folks emailing in a panic because their humidity level on their avicularia dropped below 85% and they're afraid it's going to die and it's sluggish, even though they've been spraying it down constantly. That's always going to continue. And as far as a positive of that, I guess, The positive takeaway would be back to that original point that it is an easy hobby. It's so easy that you can have two people keeping an animal totally different ways, technically speaking, and doing totally different things and still have healthy animals and still have animals that are eating and growing and aren't stressed out and aren't, you know, cowering in the corner of an enclosure. That's a really good thing because it means, again, if even pointing out some of the ways that the hobby can be complicated, I think all those examples help illustrate to anybody that may be sitting there going, oh my God, I'm so afraid I'm going to kill my spider. you're good, man. There's a lot of different ways to do this and have success with it. We all have our ways of doing it. We all think our ways are probably the better way or the easier way, but that's not to say that's the truth. There's a big gray area there. So know that because of that gray area in one way can make it daunting because which side do I pick? The other way you look at it and you go, obviously, people are doing it on both sides, so it really doesn't matter. I could pick something in the middle. My tarantula should be fine. And obviously, oversimplifying things here. But the fact that there is such a big gray area between these two polar opposite sides does show that they are very easy animals to keep, that you should not freak out. Because again, a lot of what we do here lately, especially on the podcast, I think that podcast I did about, you know, loss of confidence, a crisis of confidence, really struck a nerve with a lot of people. I admitted that I go through it. And I think these, in the moments where I'm freaking out or I think I did something wrong, these are the moments I look back and go, well, there are people keeping it this way. They're doing totally fine. They're, you know, there's, you recognize how adaptable they are, maybe victims of their own adaptability, because we'll never, ever know exactly what the correct, quote unquote, correct way is to keep them, what the quote unquote ideal temperature is, what the quote unquote ideal humidity level is, because there's no way to really measure that. We just kind of guess. So in that respect, I feel bad for him because it's not going to change. We're going to continue to debate and argue over it. And it's going to be good, healthy debate. And it's going to be good. Again, it's always good for people in any argument or any debate or any, you know, position that you have on a subject or a topic. I always think it's good for people to hear both sides of it. Even if you hear the other side and you go, yep, I still don't agree with it. It's good to know. It's good to know what they're thinking. It's good to have that in the back of your mind. I do think this is one of those situations where it's good to be familiar with the arguments on both sides and keep an open mind to it and be, you know, again, when other people come up with something different than you, don't immediately go and just tear them apart with it. Like, because I've seen this happen. You don't need to measure humidity. No. Just listen to it. Hear what they're doing. If their spider's doing well, just listen to the information. Hey, I don't measure humidity. I'm not going to sit there and try to talk others down who do. Newcomers, I do. Newcomer flat out. People that are just getting in the hobby, I do say do not do the humidity thing. Do not track it. Do not put humidity gauge in. You're going to drive yourself nuts. And I've gone through it myself, and I've dealt with enough people or worked with enough people who have done that, who have added so much stress to tarantula keeping because now they have hard numbers in front of them that they're trying to obtain, whether it be the high humidity or the high temperatures. And when they inevitably fail at doing it, they freak out and they do things that hurt the tarantula. That I say flat out. But for people that have been in for a while, or some guy, if I talked to somebody, I was talking to somebody the other day, they sent me pictures. He had humidity gauges and all of his things. And he's like, yeah, I know you don't like them. I'm like, no problem. He's been keeping for a while. But who am I to tell him? So I do think it's one of those things. Just be open-minded when it comes up, you know, share your beliefs on it, but then go, all right, I see what you're saying. And you back off. There's no need to get nasty and get into a bait and tell somebody they're wrong. Because again, you can't look at somebody and go, you're doing it the wrong way, when their proof is the same exact proof that you have that you're doing it the right way. I'm keeping them dry. They're doing great. I'm keeping them moist. They're doing great. Who's right? Who's wrong? So I think that's why, unfortunately, it will continue to be a complicated hobby, at least for folks just getting into it, or appear to be a very complicated hobby, should put it that way, to folks just getting into it and doing the research, because there is so much conflicting information out there, and it is very difficult. I've said for years, and I think that would be the final point of this, is I've said for years, you really have to consider the sources of your research and who wrote the article or did the video. And you really have to try to get to the root of which one is right, which conflicting piece of information is right, and which one is wrong. And therein is the rub, because in some cases, you can't tell. It's impossible to tell. Both anything you would do to try to dispel one of these sources of information doesn't work, because they're both having success. And I think that's something that opened my eyes a bit the other day when I was doing that research. I realize that can be incredibly difficult with somebody who doesn't have the background knowledge and somebody just coming right into it. And then in some cases it can be impossible, because they could be looking at two differing opinions and two fantastically written articles and with good information. It's not that easy to go, this is the right one or this is the wrong one. They both look right. And I get that more now. So I'll be a little more cognizant of that when I'm doling out advice. And again, a lot of times things like this for me are just kind of it's like little head check to see where we're at as far as this stuff's concerned. Because I do spend a lot of time talking to people over it, and it gets frustrating sometimes when, you know, years down the road, I'm still getting people asking me about the humidities and the temperature. And when I try to assure them they don't need to do it, they freak out. And sometimes you need something like this to go, okay, I get it now. Instead of getting, you know, sometimes I'd walk away and I'm like, you know, I need to take a break from this because I've been doing this for so long. I'm just getting tired of having the same discussion. But then when I go and research a little bit and read some of these opposing opinions, they're good ones. I see where they're coming from, and I get why the decision's so difficult and why the confusion's out there. So I just, you know, that case, I've had situations where somebody's going, well, I heard here. And I'm like, well, you may want to speak to them, because if you're going to ask me how to regulate humidity and keep that humidity right at 80%, I'm not proficient at that. I don't do that. So you're going to want to ask the person that's got experience in it. So anyway, I get it now. I got it before, and I've talked before about, I remember very well when I first got in the competing information, but I think the other night was just really trying to put myself in that mindset and going through and doing the research and seeing what's out there really drove it home that there's a lot of stuff out there. It can be very confusing. Despite, I think, very simple hobby, you're talking about arboreal, fossorial, terrestrial, you're talking about moisture dependent, need to keep the substrate moist at all time. Arid, you don't need moist substrate at all, just a water dish or somewhere in between. And that's it. I 100% back that 99% of the time, that's going to be all you're really doing as far as your tarantula is concerned. But there are other ways to keep, and they're not necessarily wrong. Could they be more difficult? Yep. Could they be different? Yep. But can they be completely right? And can the person have success? Absolutely. So again, I'm sure a lot of you guys already know this. People that have been in the hobby have already gone through. We've made up our mind. We know what works for us. And I think that's good in a way. And we need to continue to spread our way of doing things to make sure that, you know, people understand this is our way of going about it. But for those folks who are just getting into things or still wading through it, yep, it can be very confusing, because there are many different ways to approach this fantastic hobby of ours. And hopefully, if I'm still doing this stuff years from now, there might be something years from now that we're having totally different discussions. We might come to a consensus on certain things. We might have other things that pop up that we discuss. I've heard people talking now about soil additives and things of that nature for the tarantula. There's all different stuff, all different things to explore. That's one of the best parts about the hobby, is that you can be in it for 10, 20, 30, 40 years and still be learning, hopefully still be learning stuff all the way through it. Every day you work, every time you read something, read an article, read somebody else's opinion, there's always something to be gleaned from it. So I think for the time being, for the at least the foreseeable future, we will continue to have our very simple but quite complicated hobby, and that's just the way it's going to be. And as long as we can continue to debate these differences and kind of consider the other opinions in an intelligent and productive way, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. So that will do it for this one. Again, if you want to check out the video with the big spiders, got some big ones to show off there, and feel free, that's already up on YouTube. Obviously, Tom's Big Spiders on YouTube. You can find Tom's Big Spiders, the website. That will do it for this one. As always, guys, stay safe. We'll catch you next time.